For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's most experienced active investment managers. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Capital Client Group, Inc.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The campaign to ban trade between Ireland and the Israeli-occupied West Bank has received a major boost. There's no legal impediment on the government imposing such a ban, so says the EU. Joining me to discuss the latest on this is Professor Scott Lucas from the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Scott, good morning.
Good morning to you.
The ban as proposed would entail what, Scott?
So any goods which come from Israeli settlements in the Palestinian West Bank, settlements which are considered illegal under international law, those goods could not come into Ireland to be traded, and Irish goods, of course, would not go out to those settlements. So it's effectively a ban on any economic interaction with those areas, even as those settlements are being expanded by Israeli settlers.
Is there much in the way of international economic interaction between Ireland and occupied West Bank?
No, I mean, it's more of a politically symbolic move rather than one that's, you know, going to cause great economic damage to Israel or to the settlements themselves. But that political symbolism is very, very important because, of course, if Ireland does it, then you have other countries that may follow, and you may have a further isolation of those Israeli areas in the West Bank. And I should add that interacts with other steps which have been taken, which is there have been sanctions on individual settlers in the West Bank for violence against Palestinians. What you have, Anton, however, is that as this Israeli military operations in Gaza go into a 12th month, that steps such as the ban on trade with the West Bank sort of represent the isolation of that country in terms of political, being political and economic communities. Ireland already, of course, has recognized the state of Palestine, as has several other European countries. And I think you're going to see the Irish government take an increasingly firmer stance, even if it one that doesn't have, you know, a significant impact on the Israeli economy.
Although the sense one gets, Scott, is that the only international pressure that particularly Benjamin Netanyahu cares about is from the US, and the rest of the world can do what they like as far as he is concerned.
Well, I think Benjamin Netanyahu can think the US can do what it likes as well. I think, you know, we could make the argument that what makes the US distinctive is because it is such a great supplier of military aid to Israel. If it cut off that aid, if it recognized an unconditional ceasefire, maybe that would budge Netanyahu. But let's be clear here. Since October 7th and Hamas's own mass killing, Netanyahu has really been bent on Israel's own military operations to, quote, destroy Hamas. And even when the U.S. has taken limited steps against Israel and made limited condemnation of those attacks, he's continued to press ahead. So I think the only pressure that's going to be significant on Netanyahu that's actually going to possibly end those operations and lead to a ceasefire is going to have to come from within Israel, which is where the U.S. and the international community come back in. Can they communicate with other Israeli leaders? Can they communicate with other sections of the Israeli political community to say to them, respectfully, politely, but firmly, look, we need you to stand against Netanyahu now?
And to what extent do you think that is currently working? Because the protests that we've seen in recent days in Israel have been more significant than anything in the preceding months.
I think we had a catalytic moment last week, Anton, when we had the discovery of six Israeli hostages being held by Hamas who had died. They were probably executed as Hamas pulled out of positions. And when that news hit Israel, it it really shook up a country that was already beginning to express uncertainty about the open-ended war. So you had several hundred thousand people that protested over the weekend. You had a general strike that was declared on Monday. You've had thousands continue to protest. So I think the buildup is here, not necessarily because a majority of Israelis want to end action against Hamas, but they want a priority put on the return of the hostages. There are about 100 who are dead or alive still in Gaza. And that priority on getting the hostages back means that you have to talk to Hamas and possibly move towards a ceasefire rather than trying to continue, you know, these operations that have killed more than 40,000 in the country.
Can you walk me through some of the catch-22s therein? Because I would have thought we are getting to a place of, you know, that Hamlet quote of in blood so far stepped. The hostages, I assume Hamas can't give back all of the hostages because they recognize the value that they have as a bargaining chip.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.
And I assume that Israel now has to be looking at Hamas and knowing that they have created such fury and resentment and hatred among the population that Hamas is recruiting hand over fist and therefore they can't stop the military action. How do you negotiate through all of those paradoxes?
Well, let me just go to the facts, Anton. I think is the easiest way for me to answer that is. And up until Monday afternoon of this week, what you had were negotiations brokered by the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar to try to, you know, untie that Gordian knot that you're talking about. And the way that it worked is you would have a three-phase ceasefire. The first phase would last about 6 weeks. You would have subsequent phases that would last about the same amount of time. And in each phase, you would build up. So in phase one, for example, you would have some of the hostages that would be released at the same time. Israel would pull back from certain military positions inside of Gaza. By the time you got to the end of phase three, then you could finally say we've ceasefired with the return of all hostages in return for the release of Palestinians who are detained in Israeli prisons and an Israeli withdrawal from almost all of the Gaza Strip. Now, on Monday afternoon, the Israeli negotiator, who's the head of Mossad, David Barnea, said, look, we are willing to pull out of the corridor called the Philadelphia Corridor. And that's a 14-kilometer stretch along the Egypt-Gaza border. And Hamas has been demanding that. That would have been a big initial step in phase one of this proposed agreement. Hours later, Netanyahu gave a public speech, televised speech, in which he said, we're not pulling out of that corridor in phase one. We're not pulling out of that corridor in phase two. In other words, he effectively said, we're going into an open-ended occupation of Gaza. And at that point, the ceasefire talks were suspended.
So do you see that, therefore, as evidence that the schism between Barnea and Netanyahu, that there is a faction in significant roles and ranks in both the Israeli Defense Forces and power structure that could facilitate a negotiation were it not being led by Benjamin Netanyahu?
It's not just a split between the Mossad head and Netanyahu. Publicly, Benny Gantz, who was a member of the war cabinet and is now an opposition leader, he has said this is now Netanyahu's personal war because Netanyahu's trying to avoid a political and legal reckoning, including a trial on bribery charges. The opposition leader, Yair Lapid, has said this is Netanyahu's forever war. The Israeli military, privately, in private discussions, have said you cannot defeat Hamas and destroy them militarily. You're not going to accomplish that. The defense minister, Yoav Gallant, has said that. When he said that, Netanyahu publicly denounced him for pursuing an anti-Israeli narrative. Other ministers have criticized Netanyahu privately. There are other ministers, I should add, who are on the hard right who want to go further with the operations and cleanse Gaza of all Palestinians. I think probably, Anton, what I'm watching is, will the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, go public? Will he go public and tell Netanyahu directly, you cannot win this war by trying to obliterate Hamas, which means you have to have some type of political resolution through talks?
Can I ask you, do you think, Scott, that the war from an Israeli perspective, is it winnable at all? Because if we look back to the horrors and atrocities of October 7th and we say at this point were a ceasefire to be achieved, would Israel be in a safer position than it was in October 7th, which I assume has to be one of the key measures of success? Is that achievable?
I think the immediate question of that is going to be, because you're not going to get Hamas forced out of power now. They will continue to be the governing authority in Gaza. I think the question will lie in the guarantees, including by the international community, to Israeli security. I don't think that'll probably mean a peacekeeping force on the ground. I think that's too risky. I think, as we've seen with Irish peacekeepers in Lebanon, that's difficult enough. But I do think a commitment by the international community to say they will take firm action against any further Hamas attack, that would be part of an agreement. But I'll go back to a wider point. This is probably the critical choice made just after October 7th, after Hamas killed more than 1,200 people. The international community, not just the Americans, the international community went to the Israeli leadership, including Netanyahu, and said, look, if you want to break Hamas, if you want to get them out of power, you've got to isolate them from Gaza's civilians. You've got to provide assistance to those civilians while politically and economically taking measures to restrict Hamas, as well as guaranteeing Israeli security. Netanyahu and other Israeli leaders rejected that option of isolating Hamas by going for the military attacks. And when they did so, they did not split Hamas from Gaza civilians. Gaza civilians, left with no other choice, had to accept Hamas as their protector, even as many thousands of them were being killed.
Although, Scott, as our own experience here will teach us, that you mentioned Gordian knots. It is an almost indivisible Gordian knot to separate an embedded guerrilla force from the civilian population, I would have thought.
You don't separate it in the sense of getting them out in the open and that you can kill all them and so on. But as we have also seen from the experience, including on the Irish island, the way that you deal with a group when you're dealing with a conflict is that you have to provide political and economic measures as an alternative to the continuation of violence. You have to give political and economic measures to the civilian population in Gaza, which says, look, if you separate yourself from Hamas, we will support an alternative governing authority. We will provide assistance to you. We will support reconstruction, and we will make moves to end the Israeli blockade that has been imposed for more than 15 years. That would be a step forward, but it's a step that's very complicated, and it's tough to do that. It was far easier for the Israeli leadership, or at least Netanyahu, after October 7th, to simply say, we're just going to bomb the hell out of everybody and let God sort them out.
And of course, in the middle of this, we have roughly 100 people who are still in captivity in Gaza. For them, time is of the essence. We've had analysts on the program saying that one of the critical factors in this is the US election and that you can use that as a way to set the likely calendar. Would you agree?
I think the US election actually cuts the other way. And that is, I don't think you get any significant move by the Americans that could alter the dynamics before November. I don't think, for example, the Biden administration would risk cutting military aid. I don't think they come out for an unconditional ceasefire. So even as Netanyahu faces pressure from within Israel, even as the Americans privately are trying to increase that pressure, I think he still has, and I'll use this word perversely, a breathing space to carry on at least for the next 3 months.
Scott, thank you very much. That's Scott Lucas, who is professor and political analyst with the Clinton Institute in UCD.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.